Missouri Senate, please rise for the prayer by our chaplain, Pastor Gock, followed by the Pledge of Allegiance to our flag.
Arnold Glasgow wrote, "The family fireside is the best of schools." Heavenly Father, we complete another shortened week, and we are grateful for your guidance through our time here. After we complete our work, watch our going out and our coming in so we arrive safely home. And let us return to our families and find time to share and make use of teachable moments so that each of us may learn from you through the gift of others in our lives. Bless our time there and help us make the best use of it. In your holy name we pray. Amen.
Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Secretary, call the roll.
Senators Brown, here. Chappelle Nadal, Cunningham, here. Curls, here. Dempsey, here. Dixon, here. Emery, here. Holzman, here. Justice, here. Kevney, here. Kehoe, here. Krause, here. Lager, Lamping, Lavoda, Libla, McKenna, Munslinger, Nasheed, Nieves, Parson, Pierce, Richard, Romine, Roop, Sater, Schaff, Schaefer, Schmidt, Sifton, Sylvie, Wallingford, Walsh, Walson.
Senator from Andrew. A quorum is present. The Missouri Senate is now in session. Read the journal.
Journal of the Senate, first regular session, eighth day, Wednesday, January 23rd, 2013.
Mr. President.
Senator from Newton.
Mr. President, I move that further reading of the journal be dispensed with and the same be approved as having been fully read. And, Mr. President, one other item. Kermit Miller from KRCG-TV has been given permission to take flash pictures and video in the chamber.
You've heard the motion. As many as are of the opinion, it shall prevail. Say aye. Those of the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Reading is dispensed with. Introduction of guests. Senator from Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. President. I am very honored to introduce a special guest today. If she would please stand up. She is an intern in my office. Her name is Sarah Polly. She is a student at Truman State University, and she is from the senator from Grundy's County. Again, Sarah Polly, and she's an intern. I'd like to make the body maker feel welcome.
Let's welcome the guest of the senator from Johnson to the Missouri Senate. Introductions. Introduction of guests. Petitions, memorials, remonstrances. Resolutions. Concurrent resolutions. Introduction of bills. The senator from Phelps.
Mr. President, I have a bill.
Send it forward. Read the bill.
Senate Bill number 204, introduced by Senator Brown, an act relating to the tax credit for wood energy procedures.
Senator?
No explanation needed.
Senator from Barry.
Mr. President, I have one and only one bill to introduce.
Send your bill forward, sir. Read the bill. The senator from Barry.
Senate Bill number 205, introduced by Senator Sater, an act relating to foster children.
Senator. Mr. President, no explanation necessary.
Introduction of bill. Senator from Buchanan. Send it forward.
Where?
Read the bill.
Senate Bill number 206, introduced by Senator Schoff, an act relating to the designation of the official state exercise.
Senator?
No explanation needed.
Introduction of bills. Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have a bill.
Send it forward. Read the bill.
Senate Bill number 207, introduced by Senator Kehoe et al., an act relating to rate making for public utilities.
Senator?
No explanation needed.
Senator from the 10th? Send your bills forward. Read the first bill.
Senate Bill number 208, introduced by Senator Justice Ann McKenna, an act relating to reentry into the custody of the Children's Division.
Senator?
Mr. President, no explanation is necessary, but I do want to thank my senator from my colleague from Jefferson County for co-sponsoring that bill with me. Thank you, Senator.
Read the second bill.
Senate Bill number 209, introduced by Senator Justice, an act relating to higher education tuition policy.
No explanation necessary, Mr. President.
Introduction of bill. Senator from 24th. Send your bill forward. Read the bill.
Senate Bill number 210, introduced by Senator Lamping, an act relating to the Common Core Standards Initiative.
Senator?
Mr. President, in 2009, prior to me getting here and a lot of us getting here, the state began the process of adopting the Common Core Standards as outlined by the Federal Department of Education. I think we need to stop and look and understand exactly what those standards are. And my bill would suggest that without the approval of the General Assembly, that DESE could not go forward adopting those standards, and any implementation that has occurred up until now would be found null and void.
Introduction of bills. Senator from the second.
Mr. President, I have one bill.
Send your bill forward, sir.
No explanation is needed, Ms. President. Thank you.
Read the bill.
Senate Bill number 211, introduced by Senator Roop, an act relating to the management of diabetes in elementary and secondary schools.
Introduction of bills. Senator from Newton.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would you go back to concurrent resolutions? I believe we have some senators that would like to...
Concurrent resolutions. Senator from 15th.
I have a concurrent resolution.
Send it forward. Care to explain, Senator?
Yes, I'll do it... I will do this now, Mr. President, and I apologize for the length. It's a Thursday, and I don't normally explain bills when I introduce them. But as in lieu of a point of personal privilege, I would like to take the opportunity to give this concurrent resolution a little bit of context. In 2005, Mr. President, as you are aware, the the legislature embarked on creating a new foundation formula, the mechanism for distributing nearly $3 billion of GER money to the 520 school districts all across the state. That formula, of course, came after the 93 formula and after the formula that took taken place in the 1970s, which was the first. In that formula, there was a very ambitious targets for the phase-in of those hundreds of millions of new dollars every year and how those are distributed to the number of districts across the state. Beginning in 2010, we were not meeting those ambitious targets. We were spending more money than we ever had and still do on K-12 education, but not meeting those targets. And something that happened in 2010 opened my eyes to this process in a way that I didn't know before and have not been able to move away since. We, the General Assembly, in a supplemental budget, told the legislature that we want to keep the formula intact. And the general basis of that, senators, is that all those formula districts that get more and more money each year, the hold harmless districts, as part of that deal to get that thing done, said, look, we understand we're never going to get any new money in the formula, right? The only thing we're getting out of this, really, is the assurance that we will never receive less than in 2005, okay? And in 2010, we said, Governor, even though we're not going to meet those targets, keep down that path. That's where we're going. That was the deal. That was the bargain. That was the contract. And the governor simply ignored it and cut everybody equally, prorated, illegally, unconstitutionally, did it. Then, admittedly, the law is unclear during the phase in how you handle that situation. But what is absolutely clear is when the phase-in is supposed to be complete this year, the law absolutely deals with how you deal with an underfunded formula, and it requires the student adequacy target to be reduced. It doesn't require, and it doesn't suggest even, that DESE or anybody else can violate the deal and cut the hold harmless school districts. But guess what? Guess what happened this summer? We talked about it here on the floor. It was predicted that this was going to happen. DESE, on their own, without the authority from this legislature, the governing body that makes the laws of this state, without even a vote from the state school board, has decided to shift illegally upwards of $130 million across school districts as they see fit. The unelected bureaucrats in the Department of Secondary and Elementary Education have decided on their own how they're going to spend $130 million. We're shocked that an airplane was bought from underneath our noses for $5 or $6 million, which again is obviously a problem, but I'm talking about $130 million every year. Special school district in St. Louis County is robbed of $3 million a year. St. Louis Public, a struggling district, $11.5 million a year. Fort Osage, over $1 million a year. All across this state, school districts now are making cuts in the classroom because DESE has decided they know better than us how to spend taxpayer money, and it's not in their charge. For all the constitution-loving friends in this chamber, the people who believe in the rule of law, there has to be consequences. It is unfathomable that that department has taken this action, and largely without notice by members of the General Assembly, the press, anybody else paying attention, they're just doing it, and they're getting away with it. So this concurrent resolution, Mr. President, that has been filed is to say, look, we recognize the realities with the current formula, and it's time. It's time for us to look and figure out a better way to do this and to work together, Republicans and Democrats, urban, rural, suburban, work together to formulate a new formula, and that work begins hopefully now, but at a minimum in this interim, so we can do our job. We didn't get elected. This is hard. This is really hard stuff. It happens once every 10 years, probably. It's really hard, but we didn't get elected just to work on consent bills. And so this concurrent resolution allows us to begin that work. Thank you, Mr. President.
Concurrent resolutions. Senator from 24th.
I have a resolution.
Send it forward. Care to explain, sir?
To be read first before I explain? I don't know this process.
We don't read the concurrent.
Thank you very much. Okay. We're early in session.
A few weeks in, there's been a lot of discussion, not so much in our chambers and in committees, but in our hallways and in our press, and a lot of energy is going into this idea of Missouri and us, the General Assembly, agreeing to expand Medicaid to fully implement the Affordable Care Act, or as the President suggested in the first debate, Obamacare is a term he has now embraced. So there's we all know all the thoughts and ideas and the hope of certain groups that we'll take up and move to this 133% of poverty. What I would suggest a better use of our time in 2013 is that we, to the best of our ability, lobby the federal government, and these groups that are lobbying us to expand Medicaid lobby the federal government, our congressional delegation, our two states, two U.S. senators, and the governor himself begin the process of lobbying the federal government to consider reopening ACA and reallocating disproportionate share. You know, I've heard from too many people that are trying to get us to expand Medicaid that, well, the disproportionate share, that's our leverage. That's how we're going to get you to move. And we're going to tell you the story about how all these hospitals will be out of business. All the rural hospitals will be out of business. There's a little bit of truth, maybe, but there's a lot of fallacy in what they say. We all know, as written today, it's phased in over time, over the whole phase-in process. So is the elimination of disproportionate share over time. And so I think, clearly, this is an issue that confronts the entire country. There will be dozens of states that will be following the same path that we're following. This will not end in 2013. This will be an issue until ACA is changed. And in that interim, I think the best use of all of our time and energy is to redirect this energy towards the federal government and insist that at the very least they move forward the deadline, move out the deadline for the elimination of disproportionate share, and obviously, at the very least, continue the disproportionate share. Thank you, Mr. President.
Concurrent resolutions. Senator from the 10th.
I have a concurrent resolution.
Send it forward. Care to explain it, Senator?
Yes, Mr. President. This is relating to the ratification of the Equal Rights Amendment to the United States Constitution. I think that the 41st time should be the charm. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator from Newton.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of reports of standing committees.
Reports of standing committees. The Senator from the 23rd.
Mr. President, I have committee reports from your Committee on Gubernatorial Appointments. A list of the appointees has been distributed on the desks, and I would ask for a waiver of the reading. For
reading
the benefit
waived.
Of the body, Mr. President, I will be submitting the committee report on Douglas E. Nelson separately.
Send the committee report forward. Reading is waived. Senator, are you making a unanimous consent request?
I do request unanimous consent of the Senate to vote on the reports in one motion, with the body's understanding that Mr. Nelson's report is not included in this request.
Thank you, Senator. Does any senator object? Hearing none, that is how we shall proceed. Make your motion, sir.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move the committee reports be adopted and the Senate do give its advice and consent to the appointments.
Does any senator wish to be heard on that motion? Seeing none, the senator from 23rd is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. President. I renew my motion.
The senator renews his motion on adoption of the committee report confirming these nominees. As many as are of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye. Those to the contrary, no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The committee report is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. President.
You have another report?
Thank you, Mr. President. I have a report from your Committee on Gubernatorial Appointments.
Send it forward. Secretary, read this committee report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Gubernatorial Appointments, to which was referred the following appointment: Douglas E. Nelson as Commissioner of Administration, begs leave to report that it has considered the same and recommends that the Senate do give its advice and consent to said appointment. Respectfully, Senator Tom Dempsey, Chairman.
Senator from Boone is on his feet.
Of Doug Nelson as Commissioner of Administration.
Senator from Clay.
I'd like to speak on the motion.
Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. The Commissioner of Administration fulfills a very important role in state government. In fact, the Constitution references him by position in Article 4, Section 28, and it says that no money shall be withdrawn from the state treasury except by warrant drawn in accordance with an appropriation made by law, nor shall any obligation for that payment of money be incurred unless the Commissioner of Administration certifies it for payment and certifies that the expenditure is within the purpose as directed by the General Assembly of the appropriation and that there is an appropriation and an unencumbered balance sufficient to pay it. Mr. President, this officially makes the Commissioner of Administration the gatekeeper of all expenditures in state government. When we meet each year and we pass a budget and we appropriate funds, those funds eventually, as they filter their way through the administration, have to be signed off on, approved, before the check can ever be cut by the Treasury to pay for those expenditures. We've had an issue arise in the last couple of weeks, really, about this purchase that's been made in the Missouri Highway Patrol, this purchase of a $5.6 million aircraft, primarily for transport. This purchase had to, at one time, pass across the desk of Mr. Nelson, who is the acting Commissioner of Administration today. The fact that this particular expenditure was never asked for by the General, by the Missouri Highway Patrol of the General Assembly, there was never a new decision item put before the Appropriations Committee for this aircraft. In my recollection of the last 2 years, more than that, in my position on the House Budget Committee, I don't ever recollect the Highway Patrol asking the General Assembly to approve a $5.6 million aircraft. So it troubles me that a revolving fund has been used for this purchase, and it was essentially rubber-stamped by Mr. Nelson when it came across his desk. So my concern, Mr. President, if this is the type of behavior that we've seen as acting commissioner on a $5.6 million purchase, I have grave concerns about what this means over the next 4 years and how he will act as a full-fledged approved commissioner by this body. Mr. President, if I could inquire of the senator from Boone.
Does the senator yield? He yields, you may inquire.
Senator, do you recollect ever receiving a request for this aircraft that we looked at yesterday?
No. You know, nobody should fool themselves that somehow this is an ordinary transaction.
Right.
I mean, buying an aircraft like that. I mean, everyone in this room, everyone in this building knows the controversy that always surrounds aircraft and the use of aircraft. It's been an issue for multiple governors, multiple legislatures. And so, you know, but everybody's a big boy, and I'm assuming that, you know, whenever the decision was made by whomever it was involved to make the decision to buy the plane, it could not have gone unnoticed or undiscussed that there would be some concern raised by the legislature that there was not only never a request in the last 4 years that I've been on the Appropriations Committee for a new plane, but there certainly was not a new decision item, which everyone in the budget process knows. Even if you have authority in a line to purchase something, if it's something that's outside the ordinary, you seek a new decision item. And most agencies are very, very good about that, and frankly would never expect something as large and out of the ordinary as a brand new airplane to be approved without at least a request for a new decision item and a discussion with the legislature.
Yeah, in fact, Senator, several years ago when Governor Blunt was still governor, the Commissioner of Administration at that time approved a purchase of a $600,000 optical character scanner for the Department of Revenue that was not approved by the General Assembly. And at that time, the $600,000 purchase for a mailroom caused quite a stir in this building. In fact, I was very vocal about how inappropriate it was.
Mr. President.
Senator from Boone.
Can we get some quiet in the chamber, please?
Yeah. Hold it down with your conversations. Take them to the back or outside to the galleries.
Sorry, Senator. Thank you, Senator. So at that time, I was very vocal about this purchase of a $600,000 piece of equipment for a mailroom, and that was by a Republican governor and his commissioner of administration. And so, you know, for me personally, the fact that caused a problem for me then, this is literally by a factor of 10 times worse. I mean, this is a $6 million piece of equipment. The colonel of the Highway Patrol told me that, to his recollection, this was the first time that an aircraft has ever been purchased without a new decision item using the revolving fund. I mean, is that...
I would suspect that's absolutely true.
Yeah, so not only is it not normal, it's unprecedented. And, you know, so I...
And, you know, the purchase of a new aircraft, really, I can't say that the state has never purchased a new aircraft. But, for example, the King Air that was purchased in 2004, 2005, it was in 1999. The helicopter, which we all knew in the budget process, the patrol lost a helicopter in a very tragic incident last year. We knew they were going to basically, once the insurance issues were resolved, was going to get a new helicopter, which would take place under that line. We knew that. But, for example, that's a 2005. You know, and so the purchase of a brand new aircraft is a little unusual as well.
Well, sure. I mean, we can look at all kinds of reasons why this is probably a terrible use of money at this time. And, you know, the packages that were on, I mean, you saw the ribboned mahogany wood inlays, the bamboo leather seats, the drink station, which
you
I
and I did
nice
go look at it, and I will say it's an impressive piece of machinery.
Hey, at least when we're transporting prisoners, they'll have some hot coffee available because of the drink station. But ultimately, though, whether the decision was wise or smart or appropriate, which I think, you know, certainly I've been vocal in saying it was none of those things. The fact is, at some point, it passed across Mr. Nelson's desk, and never were we apprised of it until after it was purchased, either by the commissioner or the colonel or the governor's office. Nobody let us know. And so the fact that he could have, at some point, given us a heads up, let us know there was a request, let us know it was in process, perhaps even said, hey, guys, this may not be wise. This is probably going to cost some waves. I mean, the legislature, when the purchase was made, remember, it was about a month after the election and a few weeks before we returned and began our budget process, when they could have very easily come in and said, hey, we have a need for this aircraft. And so the fact that it was just rubber stamped by this commissioner of administration is a real problem for me at this time. So, Senator, I would ask if you would indulge me in perhaps considering laying this appointment over till we've had a little bit more time to dig in how the process actually played out and whether it was appropriate to be rubber stamped by this acting commissioner.
I do respect that request from you, Senator, and I will say that even though we found out about a week ago about the plane, there really hasn't been much explanation for why the plane still is necessary. But I would suspect that as part of the purchasing process, which... Again, apparently it wasn't bid and some other things like that, which, you know, we didn't know about.
It was sole sourced from a Kansas company.
Right. At some point in that decision-making chain, there must have been some explanation for the need that allowed those decision-makers, you know, Doug Nelson included, to say yes or no, and in that case, yes. But I think that as legislators in our oversight role of the appropriations process, I think we need also to know what the reasoning was so we can make a determination of whether or not that was an appropriate use of funds or not. But as I said yesterday in the committee hearing, you know, I've known Doug Nelson a long time. I was actually a law student intern in the Attorney General's office working under him back in 1994 before I graduated from law school. I've known his family for years. He has a wonderful wife. He has great kids. Our kids went to school together. And he is an extremely intelligent man. No one should doubt that. And I think it was funny, one of the political publications called him the pack mule of the administration. And there's no doubt he is one of the hardest working lawyers I have ever met. I think the term pack mule undercuts his intellectual ability because I think he's got that too. But I don't think anyone should fool themselves that this discussion was not had, or at least should have been had, by the decision makers in this process, knowing fully well the importance of that decision. And so I share a lot of the questions that you share. I will tell you, and I've talked to several of my colleagues about this. This is not an issue of the governor shouldn't be flying. I think the governor should be the number one cheerleader for the state of Missouri, and I think the governor should be all over this state as much as he can to promote economic development, public education, and everything else. This is an issue of essentially either failing to recognize or intentionally not caring about the General Assembly's role and how the public's money is spent. Well, and that is, to me, that is a very, very important issue.
And, Senator, I think that's a fair point, and I don't think anyone would disagree with the need for the governor to travel and so forth. I think having it come before us in a new decision item gives us the opportunity to decide what may be the best use of funds. Because, I mean, if you look at the way that particularly the purchase, as you mentioned, of a brand new aircraft, I mean, that's a $5.6 million purchase that just puts the plane in the hangar. That doesn't put it in the air for a single hour. It's going to cost another $900 an hour to operate that plane. And so when you look at, you know, other options for the governor to travel, either purchasing of a used plane or chartering a plane or so forth, there's a number of other things that we could have examined had we been given the opportunity, which I think is why it's so important that the legislature not be bypassed on major purchases like this. And I think that this whole situation has highlighted something for us, which I think is important for us to look at, and I hope that you'll look at on your committee, and that is the use of revolving funds throughout state government in general. I mean, because as I've mentioned, this is the second time since I've been elected down here that a governor, one from each party, has abused a revolving fund to purchase something that either the General Assembly said you shouldn't purchase in the case of the optical character scanner, or never had the opportunity to consider to purchase in the instance of this airplane. So, you know, hopefully that larger issue will be highlighted, similar to what we've done in the past couple years looking at ease and the flexibility that we give this administration or any administration, and hopefully we can do that. But I would respectfully ask at this time that you withdraw the nomination for consideration today.
And Senator, in recognition of your request, which I respect, and also the fact that there is, frankly, quite a great deal of information that we're going to have to discover on why the plane was purchased and why the cost was appropriate, why sole sourcing was appropriate, some of those things like that. I think those are very legitimate questions. So with that, Mr. President, I withdraw my motion.
Drawn. Senator from the second.
The appropriations chair, the senator from
Boone. Senator from Boone, do you yield for inquiry?
Thank you. Thank you for yielding. I was over here. I'm sorry. I missed a little bit. You said you weren't quite aware of what the reasonings were for the purchase of the plane.
Right. We just found out about the plane, so no one's really. I had a very brief conversation with the colonel
well,
the other day.
I had a thought that now this is a plane with a bigger gas tank, right?
This plane can fly from here to Mexico City without stopping to refuel.
So if I wanted to, like, go to Iowa, I could make it there.
You could probably make it back and forth a couple of times.
New Hampshire, if I just wanted to fly up to New Hampshire and
probably New Hampshire and
spend
back.
Some time.
Yes.
So
yes.
New Hampshire and back, yes. Iowa and back, two very important states for presidential primaries, and spending time up there is, we could make it there on, you know, with that plane.
But I think you do have to ask yourself, why does the Highway Patrol, and why would the Highway Patrol need to go to Iowa or New Hampshire? And I think that's a legitimate question.
Well, they'll probably have to, you know, do their duty and guard the governor who most likely might want to be visiting those states. So just, it was an interesting coincidence. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator.
Senator from Andrew.
Inquire the Senator from Boone.
Senator Yield.
I do.
Proceed.
Thank you, Senator. I think a couple points that you and the Senator from Clay talked about. This wasn't a replacement of an aircraft.
No, this is an addition.
We added
to
the fleet here.
Yes.
And we didn't add to the fleet like most of the other aircraft we have, which are the King Airs that we have, or King Air 90s. This is a 250. This is a long-range aircraft. This
right.
plane is bought to go long ranges.
Yep, seats 9
and
people.
The last time I checked, Crothersville to Watson, which is as far as you can go from corner to corner of the state, the distance hasn't changed. So if we've been able to do it for decades with a C-90, someone needs to explain to me why we're now needing a 250. And the other component, the other piece of that, I have some friends who just traded airplanes, and they would never have even thought about buying a brand new aircraft, because on the used market right now, they're paying 35 to 38 cents on the dollar.
Kind of like motorhomes. There's a lot of them out there, and you can get a good deal.
So, my issue is twofold. One, the fact that at least you weren't notified. I mean, this is a big decision item. These airplanes, ask Bob Holden if airplanes are controversial. I mean, they are a big issue all the time. This was done through a revolving fund with no knowledge. But in fact, I would argue almost a hiding from this body. But what it goes to is it underscores what the senator from the 15th talked about earlier, and that is we now have departments that candidly could care less what the legislature thinks.
But I will tell you, Senator, and for example, We do give some flexibility to agencies in their E&E lines, their personnel lines, and even though we give them that flexibility in the budget, when they're going to exercise that flexibility, I will tell you, even in the off session, let's say it's October, November, they call and just say, hey, just a heads up, we're going to exercise this. Is there an issue? And, you know, we tell them if we think it's an issue. Usually it's not, because we've given them that flexibility. But, I mean, and that's something as minor as say, a couple $100,000 in flexibility, which is obviously substantially less than $5.6 million.
Well, the senator from Clay mentioned that it costs about $900 an hour to fly this airplane. And I was just quickly doing the math in my head. If we paid $6 million, and to make the math easy, if you use $1,000 an hour, that's 6,000 hours just to cover the capital expenditure. Now, they told us out there the other day that they fly those aircraft between 250 hours per year, maybe 300 hours per year, say in a busy year. So it would take 20 years to cover just the capital cost, let alone the operating cost. I mean, this is what people get so upset about with government. It's the irresponsible spending that would never happen in the private sector. And my point on all this is there's consequences to their actions. Now, I'm not sure the right consequence is blocking Doug Nelson. I mean, of all the top-tier appointments that I've had the opportunity to meet during my time in public service, this is the first guy that ever walked in with a plan, a vision. He knows what he wants to do. He knows how he wants to change government, none of which, by the way, included buying new aircraft.
Right, and I will tell you, along with that, for an administration that is pretty secretive and pretty cloistered away, he is probably, you know, Doug is probably the most open person. When you ask him a question, you are going to get an honest answer. Even if he knows it's the answer that you don't like, he's going to tell you the answer. So, at least, you know, he's very candid. There's no doubt about that.
Well, my point is, I think that we as a Senate, not partisan politics, but we as a Senate, have to reestablish this check and balance. And unfortunately, the executive branch, whether it's because of term limits, whatever it is, every day they reach and they take more. And that's got to come to a stop. So whether it's DESE, who is directly ignoring the statute, the law of the state, or it's the Highway Patrol, who has made a decision to expend money that I don't know how anyone in their right mind would think is a legitimate expenditure in this economy, in this time, there have to be consequences for those actions. When our kids, when Addison tests mom and dad, there's consequences. And you know what? Sometimes she does it anyway. Doesn't bother her. But she knows she's going to get in trouble. As we go through the appropriations process, there need to be consequences for what has happened.
But I'll tell you, as a father of three kids, usually when they make that decision to test you, even if they're 5 or 6 years old, they know what the potential consequences are and consciously make the decision to test you anyway.
That's right, and there's no doubt that happened here. So thank you, Senator. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator.
Senator from the 15th.
Inquire the Senator from Boone.
Senator from Boone, yield?
I do.
He does. Proceed.
I won't prolong this. I just want to make the point. You mentioned earlier about you know, some discretion that these agencies have in their budget. Would you agree with me that there is no discretion for DESE to shift $130 million a year among school districts and be picking their favorites and without statutory authority?
I'd absolutely agree with you, and I've had that discussion with DESE. And, you know, the thing that concerns me, and this goes to the previous inquiry, you know, we're seeing a lot of things in the last 4 years that we have to deal with that really are unprecedented. And that is, you know, agencies from the executive branch pushing and pushing and pushing. And it really is, I mean, at some point you have to draw the line on, you know, at what point do you have to uphold the integrity of the Senate and of the General Assembly and say, no, we simply can't allow this anymore. I've had that discussion with DESE, and as most people know, when the funding formula was changed, the concept was it stair-stepped up an appropriation every year till 2013, And then it was supposed to be fully funded in 2013, and you had some other triggers that came along with 2013. And so what happened was when the economy went bad in 2009, that was the first year to say, well, we're not going to stair step. We can't fund it the way it's supposed to be funded. And that's what's happened basically every year since we've been having to cut several hundred thousand dollars out of the budget every year since that time. But that provision in the change in the formula that said the formula changes by nature in 2013 exists. And what happens is for every year prior to 2013 as the stair step went up, there was no mechanism to address a shortfall because Correct. It was never contemplated there'd be a shortfall. But it says in 2013, if there is a shortfall, there is a mechanism to address the shortfall, and that is adjusting the adequacy target.
And guess what? DESE doesn't like that mechanism.
They don't like it.
They don't like it.
Right. So they're implementing a hybrid
right.
between proration and adjusting the target. And so I know several of us, when we found that out over the summer, that's what they were going to do. We said, well, wait a minute. You have no legal authority to prorate. Your only mechanism for adjusting the shortfall, whether people like it or not, in law, is adjustment of the adequacy target. And they acknowledge that that is what the statute says, but they think it is more fair to do a hybrid, even though they don't have legal authority for it.
Yeah, and I hope we get to a place where, you know, whether or not, and I've got in the packet that I left with people, the districts that are adversely affected by this decision. And I hope that, and that's just to highlight, I think, what's happening. And I hope we get to a point, even if it's hold harmless or form, there's a broader principle at play here of whether or not we want to uphold a very fundamental foundation of our republic, which is the idea of separation of powers, that the judiciary interprets the law, we make the law, and the executive branch executes the law. That doesn't mean if they don't like it or they're going to get a lot of phone calls from somebody that they don't want to do it. I mean, we've got to, at some point, start saying enough is enough in something that we, I think, have to get out in front on. We've been talking about it, but the truth is DESE doesn't see any consequence. But let me tell you what a real consequence is. In addition to the appropriation process, a real consequence is this. If someone sues from a district adversely affected, okay, whether it's the district itself or a taxpayer withstanding, and they say, DESE, what you're doing is illegal. You're supposed to, the formula has a mechanism to deal with this. And they win. And they will win. They will win. I don't actually think this is...
I think the language and statute is pretty
clear,
yes.
I've talked to some other folks about it. They're going to win. And what is the remedy? The remedy is, I want my money. Right? So then DESE has created an even bigger problem because now they got to reach into those districts that they were trying to somehow protect in their benevolence, okay? They're reaching in, and then they're sending that money back to the districts that were adversely affected, and then you have a monumental nightmare that guess who has to deal with it? We have to deal with it.
Right.
And so that's why, again, I think it's important for us to have this interim committee and start working on a new formula to avoid the problems that I think DESE is creating.
And I think you raise a really good point, which is we've certainly seen funding formula cases in the past which rely on very much broader terms of constitutionality and what's fair and what's not fair. And you know as a lawyer how that gets into some gray area. I think the suit that will come, and it will come because I've already talked to several districts who are looking at that, it's not this kind of vague, is this good, is this bad, is it fair for over here? This is plain language in the law that is in effect in the state of Missouri. So that ambiguity's gone out the window. So I agree with you. I think it's a much different type of case. And I think potentially the General Assembly and the state of Missouri is looking at the possibility of a large slug of money that in addition to the cost of the lawsuit is going to have to we're going to have to produce potentially to compensate for the decision that DESE made.
Well, I appreciate working with you and your committee on figuring out a way to actually provide a consequence to what it's the largest appropriation that we have every year, $3 billion basically, the largest appropriation and a shift of $130 million a year that unelected bureaucrats have decided is what they think ought to happen. It violates the law. I mean, it's unprecedented, that kind of money. I appreciate the discussion about the plane because it's a legitimate discussion to have. But this is what...
If you think about it, there are similarities here.
Yeah.
Those two issues have some commonalities from the executive branch.
Well, hopefully we can put this discussion in. And I think it needs to be a serious discussion and serious people
working on this issue, because it's not, these are very, the formula is a very tough thing to get through. But again, I think we have a responsibility to do it. So.
Well, I agree. And from my perspective as well, this year, this fiscal year that we're currently in, the formula is underfunded by $460 million. And if we stay on this course and what we expect to see in the governor's proposed budget, that'll be a shortfall of $600 million for next year.
Yeah.
My point has always been, if we have a formula, we need to fund the formula. And if the formula is too expensive, then we need to go back and address the formula, as you're saying. I'm not a big fan of dumbing down the formula to simply respond to what we have. I think we need to be proactive, as I think you want to be, and make a determination of where we should be and then fund it appropriately.
Yeah.
So I look forward to working with you on that.
Thank you, Senator.
Thanks, Senator.
We are on reports of standing committees. Senator from the 15th.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have a report.
Please send it forward. Secretary, please read the report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Jobs, Economic Development, and Local Government, to which was referred Senate Bill 20, Senate Bill 15, Senate Bill 19, begs leave to report that it has considered the same and recommends that the Senate Committee substitute hereto attach do pass. Also, Mr. President, your Committee on Jobs, Economic Development, and Local Government, to which was referred Senate Bill 10 and Senate Bill 25, begs leave to report that it has considered the same and recommends that the Senate Committee substitute hereto attached do pass. Respectfully submitted, Senator Schmidt, Chairman.
Senator from the 24th.
President, the Committee on Seniors, Families, and Pensions has a report.
Please send it forward. Secretary, please read the report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Seniors, Families, and Pensions, to which was referred Senate Bill 47, begs leave to report that it has considered the same and recommends that the Senate Committee substitute hereto attached do pass. Also, Mr. President, your Committee on Seniors, Families, and Pensions, to which was referred Senate Bill 48, begs leave to report that it has considered the same and recommends that the bill do pass. Respectfully submitted, Senator Lamping, Chairman.
Senator from Newton.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of announcement. Would you please recognize me for announcement?
Senator from Newton, proceed with your announcement.
Mr. President, shortly the Senate will be going to the order of business of second reading of Senate bills, followed by messages from the House. At that time, I will be making a motion to stand in recess until 11:30 for the purpose of taking a committee report for the Committee on Rules, Joint Rules, Resolutions, and Ethics. After which, an adjourning motion will be made until 4 o'clock, Monday, January 20, 2013. I would also remind the members that the State of the State address will be Monday evening at 7 p.m.
Thank you, Mr. Senator. We are on the order of business, seeing no objection of announcements. Senator from St. Charles County.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would like to announce that the Committee on Small Business, Insurance, and Industry will be having a brief executive session immediately upon adjournment down in SCR1. Thank you.
On the order of business of announcements. Senator from Newton.
Mr. President, thank you. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of second reading of Senate bills.
Seeing no objection, second reading of Senate bills, Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. First, after consultation with the chairman and the bill sponsors, I would like to re-refer Senate Bill 100 to the Committee on Seniors, Families, and Pensions, and Senate Bill 29 to the Committee on Government Accountability and Fiscal Oversight.
Those bills will be so referred, re-referred.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senate Bill 101.
Senate Bill 101, relating to florists.
General laws. Senate Bill 102.
Senate Bill 102, relating to catalytic converters.
Commerce, consumer protection, energy, and the environment. Senate Bill 103.
Senate Bill 103, relating to alternative fuel tax credits.
Jobs, economic development, and local government. Senate Bill 104.
Senate Bill 104, relating to the issuance of state license plates.
Transportation and infrastructure. Senate Bill 105.
Senate Bill 105, relating to a statutory cause of action against health care providers.
Judiciary and civil and criminal jurisprudence. Senate Bill 106.
Senate Bill 106, relating to current and former military personnel.
Veterans Affairs and Health. Senate Bill 107.
Senate Bill 107, relating to the Fireman's Retirement System of St. Louis.
Seniors, Families, and Pensions. Senate Bill 108.
Senate Bill 108, relating to automated traffic enforcement systems.
Transportation and infrastructure. Senate Bill 109.
Senate Bill 109, relating to hospital licensure.
Veterans Affairs and Health. Senate Bill 110.
Senate Bill 110, relating to child custody and visitation for military personnel.
Veterans Affairs and Health. Senate Bill 111.
Senate Bill 111, relating to pharmacy inventories.
Judiciary and civil and criminal jurisprudence. Senate Bill 112.
Senate Bill 112, relating to the new markets tax credit.
Jobs, economic development, and local government. Senate Bill 113.
Senate Bill 113, relating to persons required to report child abuse and neglect.
Judiciary and civil and criminal jurisprudence. Senate Bill 114.
Senate Bill 114, relating to intoxicating liquor manufactured for personal use or family use.
General laws. Senate Bill 115.
Senate Bill 115, relating to the Missouri Employers Mutual Insurance Company with an effective date for certain sections.
Small business insurance and industry. Senate Bill 116.
Senate Bill 116, relating to uniformed military voters.
Financial and government government organizations and elections. Senate Bill 117.
Senate Bill 117, relating to residency at public institutions of higher education.
Veterans Affairs and Health. Senate Bill 118.
Senate Bill 118, relating to veterans treatment courts.
Judiciary and civil and criminal jurisprudence. Senate Bill 119.
Senate Bill 119, relating to the State Sovereignty Commission.
Financial and governmental organizations and elections. Senate Bill 120.
Senate Bill 120, relating to an air export incentive.
Jobs, economic development, and local government. Senate Bill 121.
Senate Bill 121, relating to liquor control.
Commerce, consumer protection, energy, and the environment. Senate Bill 122.
Senate Bill 122, relating to public records and meetings.
Judiciary and civil and criminal jurisprudence. Senate Bill 123.
Senate Bill 123, relating to municipal hotel and motel taxes.
Jobs, economic development, and local government. Senate Bill 124.
Senate Bill 124, relating to firearms.
General laws. Senate Bill 125.
Senate Bill 125, relating to employment of school personnel.
Education. Senate Joint Resolution 3.
Senate Joint Resolution 3, relating to Fifth State Building Fund.
Appropriations. Senate Joint Resolution 4.
Senate Joint Resolution 4, relating to elective state officers.
Financial and governmental organizations and elections. Senate Joint Resolution 5.
Senate Joint Resolution 5, relating to the adjournment of the legislative session.
Governmental accountability and fiscal oversight. Senate Joint Resolution 6.
Senate Joint Resolution 6, relating to voter photo identification.
Financial and governmental organizations and elections. Senate Joint Resolution 7.
Senate Joint Resolution 7, relating to appointment commissions.
Rules, joint rules, resolutions, and ethics.
Senator from Newton.
Mr. President, would you inquire the Secretary if we have messages from the House, and if so, please have them read.
There are messages. Madam Secretary, please read the messages from the House.
Mr. President, I am instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has taken up and passed a House committee substitute, House Bill 110, entitled An Act Relating to Vacancies and Time Limits for Certain Offices, Emergency Clause Adopted, in which the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Respectfully submitted, Daniel Adam Kremlis, Chief Clerk.
Senator from Newton.
Mr. President, I move the Senate stand in recess to 11:30 this day.
You've heard the motion from the Senator from Newton. All those in favor of that motion say aye. Those opposed, nay. Ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The Senate shall stand in recess till 11:30 this day.